Australia on the Triple M network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
G'day, Tanya. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, Tanya. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Swansea, like Central Coast area, halfway between Sydney and Newcastle.
Central Coast of New South Wales. All right. What are we talking about?
So you were talking a bit before about like the hospitals and sort of malpractice and everything.
I can't believe, I cannot believe what I'm reading. And
what I'm reading is Victoria.
But I'm tipping if these figures are that bad in Victoria, they've got to be pretty bad right around Australia. How is it possible that a piece of medical equipment can be left inside a patient?
Yeah, that's pretty dodgy.
It's pretty dodgy.
They do. They're supposed to have checklists to tick off that they've got all of the equipment that they've used.
Do you work in a hospital, do you?
No. I don't work in a hospital. I have aunties and stuff that are nurses and things. But
what do they say?
There are a lot of forms that they have to go through, and probably sometimes they're not done properly.
Well, obviously not. If you're going to leave a scalpel or something inside a patient, something's gone horribly wrong.
It's a bit scary, isn't it?
Yes.
The reason that I called was because it's not current, so mine is actually about 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
But my dad went to hospital with cramps in his leg.
Yeah.
He was misdiagnosed and given the wrong medication. And 2 days later, he basically spent the entire time in hospital, but 2 days later, he actually passed away.
Oh, no.
So there was a big court case. It was a big malpractice. It was on the news in Newcastle and Sydney. It was all through the papers. Hunter New England Health, like the health system up here, they actually all got overhauled with, I think it was about 14 or 15 different practices that they had to put in place to stop what happened to my dad, because basically it was one thing after the next, and there were so many times when it could have been corrected and it wasn't, and it ended up with him passing away because it had just gone too far.
What did he pass away of?
So he had cramps in his legs. He went in the middle of the night, had cramps, and they sort of brushed him off as a compensation claim because he'd been injured from work years ago. So they just sort of ignored him to start with. By the time they saw him, they took him for an X-ray and an ultrasound. And the radiographer there has sent back to the ED saying that he had a blood clot.
All right.
So they've gone through standard procedure. Okay, given him Clexane. They gave him the daily dose of Clexane. You can have it in two ways. One, they go, but both are by your weight, but you either get a daily dose or you get two half doses throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave him the daily dose just because apparently it was a really big blood clot. So they were a bit worried. So they gave him that, and then they monitored him for a couple of hours in the hospital, and they sent him home. So he went in at 2 a.m. in the morning. They sent him home around 3 that afternoon and gave him some warfarin and all these tablets and things that he would have to take.
Warfarin's a blood thinner, yep.
Yeah, so just to keep going so that, you know, the blood clot didn't do any more damage. So it was about 3 hours later, he was on the couch and he was just in agony and his leg was just swollen.
Mm-hmm.
So we call an ambulance and send him back. They took him back, and the first thing the doctors say is, oh, what are you in here for? And he just sort of went, I was in here about 3 hours ago. They've told me I've got a blood clot, but I'm just in pain and I need help.
Help me.
Yeah, basically. So they couldn't find his discharge papers, which was one of the things that they got in trouble for. Yeah. So then they couldn't find what, like, he'd been treated for, so they gave him more Clexane. So they gave him, in the end, another half a dose of Clexane within 12 hours of the first one. And then they waited a little bit and they did a scan and they found that he actually had a bleed in his leg, not a blood clot.
Oh, with the warfarin would have exacerbated that.
Yeah. So essentially what they'd done was made that blood that was coming out of the hole come out a lot faster and was filling up his leg.
Because
so
of the one leg was because like the blood thinners, the yeah.
Yeah. So in the end, they've gone, okay, we need to do surgery straight away. They've rushed him in, cut him open, fixed the hole. And apparently, so the doctors say, they checked, there was no other bleeding. They found that it was fine. They stitched him back up and sent him out back onto the ward. He went into ICU and then back onto like a regular ward. He was there for maybe an hour before he became tachycardic. He couldn't speak. He was out of it.
Oh, geez.
Then they've gone, something else is wrong. They debated. Apparently, they were either just going to take him back into surgery and open him up and try and find it, or do a scan. They did the scan and found that there was like half a mil of, I'm not sure what they're called, but like you've got your main artery and then like the little branches that come off. One of them, half a mil, was just peeing out blood, essentially, because they hadn't done anything about the clexane. They'd never tried to counteract it. So his blood was really thin still. And so he was now bleeding from another spot. And so they tried to take him in for a second operation. They couldn't get the tube down his throat because he had a reaction from it the first time when they took it out. They did a tracheotomy and they couldn't get that tube in because it was still too thick. They ended up having to give him like a baby-sized one. By the time they got it in, he'd been down for about 15 minutes without oxygen, 3 cardiac arrests. They managed to keep him alive. But yeah, they went in, found the bleeding and stitched that up. But they literally could not, they were too scared to move him off the operation bed. Because they thought if they'd move him, it'd send him into cardiac arrest again and they probably wouldn't be able to save him. So they left him, like, blood-soaked sheets up, which is obviously that's not their fault. By that point, those poor people that did that last operation had no hope. Like, it had been mistake after mistake, and by the time they got to him, they literally couldn't do anything else. So he ended up in ICU and he never left. So he went into ICU about 6 p.m. the second day, and he died at 2 a.m. like that morning, just because his organs were just all shutting down. Like, he just, like, you know, he couldn't take it anymore, and everything. He was only really alive because the machines were keeping him alive.
What a disaster! So you, it went through the legal process, and were you and your family awarded a payout?
Me and my sister, yes. So my mum actually passed away the next year. She had cancer from a few years before and it came back a bit after Dad died. So she only made it 11 months and never actually got to see the court case or anything, which is a bit of a shame because she was, you know, I think it really affected her more than me and my sister. And yeah, so she didn't quite get to make it, but there was a court case. It went for about 2 weeks. I don't know if I want to name the hospital.
No, don't just now. No need. But here's the thing: this story that we're talking about this morning is the 120 deaths that have occurred in Victorian hospitals that could have been averted, and 120 patients who have died and suffered due to medical errors. And the deaths were due to medical blunders, to administrative errors. And the other thing that's happening, we find out, according to the shadow Victorian health minister, is that a lot of this is unreported.
Oh, yeah. If a family doesn't complain, if you don't make any sort of... If a person's passed away, if you don't do a coroner's report on it then... It kind of just gets pushed under the rug.
Yeah. Well, it's a terrible, terrible story. And these are hospitals in Australia. We're not talking about Bangladesh.
No. The only reason my dad actually passed away was because the radiographer was not qualified.
Wasn't qualified?
No, he wasn't qualified. He didn't even pass his second term at TAFE. And he was allowed to work in that hospital unsupervised. He was supposed to be supervised by a professor who would check all of his work, and he'd been working unsupervised for 5 years.
Hang on.
Yeah,
hang on.
That's the kicker.
Hang on. This is a radiographer.
Yeah.
Who's working in a public hospital.
Yeah.
Making diagnoses.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
He hasn't even finished a TAFE course?
No. He failed the first one, and he never finished the second one.
Well, how was he allowed to practice?
I don't know. He was supposed to be monitored by this professor who's the head, that he would double check all of the like diagnoses. And I guess over time, he just went, okay, he's been doing it for so long now.
Let him
I'm
go.
I'm just going to let him go.
Holy shit.
And yeah, so he, and the only, like my dad was a fat man, so he had fat legs, right? Any standard, like smart radiographer would know that you need to use a certain level radar to get into the skin. He didn't. He used this, like if it was just a standard skinny person, and that doesn't go deep enough to actually see anything.
That doesn't penetrate.
Yeah.
He had failed a TAFE course.
Yeah.
And was in charge of making life-saving diagnosis.
Yeah, and that's the whole problem. It all spiraled from there. Yeah, I'm pretty certain he doesn't work at that hospital anymore. But
where is he now? Yeah. McDonald's. You wouldn't trust it. You wouldn't.
I hope not.
Yeah, you'd have to check your order.
Yeah.
I mean, you're laughing, but this is not a laughing matter. This is your father.
Well, it's 10 years ago for me. I know I'm laughing, but like 10 years, you've got to laugh at it at some point because it's
my
just a joke.
God, I hope it can't happen again. So they put the ringer through this particular area health service, and hopefully that will never, ever happen again. Just tell me again. Are you listening to this, folks? This is a radiographer. I didn't know it was just a TAFE course. I thought you might have to go to university.
If you want to be qualified to make the decisions on your own, yes, you need a degree.
But if you just want to operate the equipment, you go to TAFE.
The equipment, yeah, that's it.
TAFE course. And you've got people's lives in your hand.
Yeah. He's not supposed to make the final decision without the guy that went to, you know, uni, the professor, without him ticking off saying yes.
Tell me this. If you were having your car serviced,
mm.
and the person who did the service on your car was a first-year apprentice who had failed his first year in TAFE or hurt his first year.
You probably wouldn't want to drive it.
You would hope that an experienced mechanic would be supervising their work to make sure the brakes worked.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd worked in that hospital for, I think, about 10 years by that point. So, yeah.
Unqualified.
Yeah, unqualified the whole time.
I'm stunned.
So I just thought, I'll just let you know that that's the whole reason. The person in the ED, the doctor that got the report, just thought that this person knew what they were talking about. And because they're not qualified to read the chart, you know, they just went on what the recommendation was, which
yes,
was a blood
of course.
Clot.
Yes.
So, and then they actually had expert witnesses have a look at it in the court case.
Yeah.
And they went, I cannot see a blood clot. There is no way I would ever say that there is a blood clot without further testing. So what he should have advised is, you know, do a CAT scan or something like that so that we can check if it's yes or no.
God, I hope that person's not serving a McDonald's.
Oh, yeah, I hope he's not doing anything.
Hope he's not working a stop-go sign.
It's scary.
It is really scary. Tanya, thank you for your call.
That's okay, thank you.
She's laughing about it now. It was 10 years ago. Unbelievable. What is your experience of our public hospitals? Do you work there? Can someone please tell me how it is at all possible that amongst the complaints found in the Victorian health system have been deaths caused by surgery being carried out on the wrong body part? Well, now we know how that can happen. There have been other cases where medical equipment was left in patients. Unbelievable. The Night Shift on Triple M. Sean.
Hello.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. Talk to me.
Hey, I heard you talking about unnecessary deaths in Australian hospitals, so I thought I'd tell you my family story. We had a family friend who had a blocked bowel, and she had excruciating stomach aches from it and went to hospital. They rushed her to the emergency and she got told, oh, we're full here. You're going to have to go to another one. So they took her to the next closest one and they were told, oh, we can't operate on bowels or we don't have anything to do with blocked bowels here. So you're going to have to go to this hospital. So they go there and she was told that there's nothing they can do for her and she's going to have to sit in the waiting room, just the general waiting room, till they've got room for her. And she sat there for 3 days.
No.
In the waiting room with just every, you know, normal person that just walks in.
3 days in a waiting room?
at a hospital, yep.
Three days?
And 3 days, yep.
And what, at the end of the day, she'd go home?
No, she was in so much pain that they never left. She stayed there the entire 3 days.
Overnight?
Overnight, yeah. She was literally the 72 hours just in the hospital waiting room.
Sitting in a chair?
Sitting in a chair, yeah.
Not even in the bed?
Not a bed. They didn't have any beds, so she wasn't allowed to have a bed. They started giving her painkillers after the laxatives weren't working. Since then, I've found out from a friend who's studying medicine at uni that a lot of painkillers actually cause constipation.
Yes, they do, especially opiates.
Yeah, so they'll probably keep making it even worse. Mm. So the third day comes and she passes out on the floor, starts convulsing. Finally, she gets some medical attention. She's completely non-responsive. Her bowels rotted. It's gone septic. Basically, that night she passed away because her organs started shutting down.
Holy, this is Australia.
Yep, this is Adelaide.
This is Adelaide. And tell me, the people working behind the counter watching this woman sit there in pain for 3 days, didn't they do something?
They wouldn't give her a cup of tea.
They wouldn't give her a cup of tea?
Nope. Her husband had to continuously go back and forth bringing her breakfast, lunch and tea, flasks of tea if she wanted tea, you know, constantly buying bottles.
Unbelievable.
And they just left her there. And now he's taking legal action.
Let me know. Keep an eye on it. Let's keep an eye on how it goes. I'd very much like to talk to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll try to get him to ring up.
Yeah. At least get him to email me.
Yeah. No worries.
Get him to email me and tell me the story. Okay.
Yep. No worries.
Thank you, Sean. That is unbelievable. 133353. So there's an inquiry into healthcare in Victoria. But as I said, I knew that there'd be problems nationally. More than 120 patients have died or suffered serious harm due to medical errors across hospitals in Victoria in the last 2 years. Collated reports have found that Monash Health recorded 10 events, Melbourne Health 9, Eastern Health reported 7. The Mercy Hospital had 4 in the last year. In one incident, a person died after being administered the wrong dose of medication from nurses, receiving a dose 10 times higher than prescribed. And despite the alarming numbers, Mary Waldridge, who is the Shadow Health Minister, says there could be even more that we don't know about because underreporting is significant. This is just Victoria. There we go. We just heard from about Adelaide. And we've heard about a hospital in the Newcastle area. Wow. 133353.
Softy. Hey, buddy.
Mate, how are you?
Oh, for a Monday, mate, not too bad.
Yeah, what did you do on the weekend?
Oh, not a hell of a lot. My brother come round today and had a little barbecue and took the missus out the motorbike on Saturday, so yeah, done a little bit.
You're going all right, are you?
Going okay, mate, not complaining.
Okay.
Mate, that radiographer, that is university, mate's one of them. 3 years at university and then a 12-month sort of prac out in a hospital.
You know a bit about it?
Yeah, well, my mate's one.
Okay, tell me.
Well, it's, once again, it's like 3 years and then 12 months, and that's a radiographer, and a radiologist is the one that reads the reports.
Mm.
That's actually a doctor specialist, and that's 12 years.
That's a specialist job. Well, this guy
correct
had, according to Tanya,
yeah,
from Swansea, that this bloke had failed his first year in TAFE but was still working in a hospital. There was an inquiry. It's all public record, this. He was working in a hospital writing reports and he'd failed his first year in TAFE.
Might have been. Yeah, like, look, 10 years ago is a big difference, but I don't know, maybe he only needed to be a wedding photographer back then, mate. I don't know.
The thing is, it's not funny, and Tanya was laughing, but it's not funny because it was her dad.
I know, it's terrible. All I know is it's a university course, mate.
Yeah, well, so it should be.
Mate, another thing.
Yes.
Every time you talk about it, I bring it up. Culling sharks.
Well, they've killed 4 now, and they have no idea as to whether or not any of those 4 sharks are the sharks that bit those 2 women last week.
Well, Luke, I remember talking only about a month or 6 weeks ago is we're bagging that pita for protection of animals, right? And how you said you like a good T-bone steak, correct?
Yep.
What's the difference to a nice bit of flake and shark fin soup?
Yeah, they say...
Can you tell me that? What's the difference?
They reckon you shouldn't eat flake because it's high in mercury.
Well, unfortunately, it's still a food. You know, like, we got Foxtel. They're gaffing them great big bits of tuna over in America. Crabs, prawns, like fish. You know, they can kill a lovely blue marlin and eat that.
Yeah.
So, really, are we going to go back to the 1900s and get a shark attack every week? And we can talk about this in another year or two when some kid between the flag gets taken by a shark. Because it's going to happen, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I've been surfing for a long time. And yeah. I'm seeing now a lot of my mates have been a lot concerned over the last 10-year period when you are seeing sharks constantly in the water.
You are a very keen surfer and you're out there in the water every day. Do you reckon there's more sharks?
Without a doubt.
Because we protect them?
We're protecting them. And look, they're going boats. Have a talk to an abalone diver over there and lobsters over there in Western Australia.
Yeah, go on.
It's out of hand. Every time you hear about it, it's out of hand. They've got to start culling white pointers, bull sharks and tiger sharks, which are the main offenders. And I'm sick and tired of people that keep sticking up for these sharks and they can comment and half of these people don't even go in the water.
Yeah.
And it's all fine to say they're the top of the food chain. No, we are.
We're supposed to be.
Well, like, I'm not saying to totally erase them. I'm just saying to cull some of these dangerous ones.
Okay, fair enough.
It's, come on. Like, in the end, what are we going to do? Are we going to adopt the shark and go down there and throw some blood and bone out and feed them, are we, and pat them? What are we going to do? Like, come on. I'm sick and tired of all these soft-ass people. Grow some balls.
Cull sharks. We need some scientific evidence to tell us that there are more sharks today than there were 20 years ago or 30. When did we first start protecting sharks?
Luke, mate, I never used to see a shark when I was 20-year-old, mate. Never seen one. You know, and now they're coming in closer.
Is that because there's more sharks or is that because the fish that they're chasing are coming closer?
I don't know, but when it comes down to it, Luke, mate, if it's fine to eat a steak, it's fine to kill fish, what's the difference? Does it really matter? You know I'm getting upset.
Folks, softy's barring up here.
Oh, yeah. Come on, mate.
You need a punchline. When you deliver these editorials, you need to say, I'm softy, but I'm barred up. That's what you need.
Look, I don't begrudge you having a nice red steak, like you said.
Yeah.
But if I want to have a nice bit of flake and a bit of shark fin soup, why can't I have that as well?
Folks, is Softy onto something here? Give us a call. 1-3-3-5-3. Good on you, mate.
You're right, mate.
You're a funny bastard. You really are.
Bye.
He says, cull away. And seriously, he is a mad keen surfer. He's in the water every day. He reckons he's never seen so many sharks. I tell you, Softy, this shark culling story has divided the nation. Michael on Facebook says, a quote by the Navy diver attacked in Sydney Harbour. If you know there are man-eating tigers in the jungle, it's on your own head to enter the jungle. Softy says, nah, cull them, eat them, flake and shark fin soup. We're the top of the food chain, not the sharks. Chris and John on Facebook. Hi, Luke and Jess. We are listening from Split in Croatia. And what do they say?
They're eating mussels and oysters.
Mussels and oysters in Croatia. There you go. Nice to know you're listening, folks. 1-3-3-5-3. A couple of lines are available. G'day, Craig. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks, Luke.
Good. Yep. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. About 5 years ago, I was hit. I got a king hit. I was taken to the hospital, not knowing because I was in concussed. About 11 o'clock the next morning, this nurse is showing me, Craig, you're right to go home. Huh? I went back to sleep. She done it again. You're right to go home, Craig. And I sort of half woke up and I said, well, where's my clothes? And she said, oh, the ambulance drivers had to cut them all off you. And I said, well, how am I getting home? I had no one to pick me up or anything. Anyway, I had a pair of boxers on. She threw me these old pair of shorts, and I looked at them and thought, gee, they're big. Pulled them on and rolled them about four times and let them go, and they fell down the ground. And this old raggy shirt she gave me. Anyway, I said, where's my shoes? She gave me my shoes, put them in my hand. Started walking out of the hospital, walking home. It was about an hour's walk, about a kilometre's walk up the road. And lucky me brother and my nephew went past and they noticed me walking.
Mm-hmm.
So they turned around, picked me up, took me home. I was in bed 8 days. My dad looked after me and he tried to ring the hospital. There was no comment from him. So he took me to another big hospital in Newcastle to do a test. I was sent back home. And then I was told, oh, yeah, you can get this criminal compensation number. I got that sort of thing. When I went to contact it, I had to get reports and that from the hospital, but this sleeping for 8 days, I'd get up and I'd have all this dizziness. I'd go back and sleep.
You were heavily concussed. Just stop for a sec, Craig. So you told me that you were king hit.
Yep, that's right.
Tell me what happened.
What happened? We were sort of at a... I was near midnight, walked in this pub with one of my friends, and there's another person I knew there.
Yeah.
He was over at another table.
Yes.
And these two guys were mouthing and off, and he didn't know I was there, and I didn't. I said, hey, that's my mate you're talking to. Huh? Anyway, a couple of minutes later, the bouncers come and grab them two guys and kick them out the front.
Yes.
And
so you're inside?
Yeah, I was inside, and the mate, the bloke they were mouthing off to, he said, I'm going up the other night. I said, you're not going up there without the other two of us to walk with you. No, I'm going up there. We walked across the road, and come back here. The next minute, behind, there was a big brick fence halfway around a corner. One of them guys were hiding down underneath that. And next minute, I felt this big hit. And the head going down, crashing into the gutter curtain.
People die from this sort of stuff, Craig.
I realise that.
Now, Craig, where were your mates? Why were you at the hospital alone? How come you didn't have a mate with you?
Well, I don't know what happened to him.
How did they let you get into an ambulance on your own?
Yeah, well, all the bouncers, all the ones, because I sort of go around to a bit of a night season. I'm 55 now, but... I did because I'm into a lot of live music and music sort of scene. And when I got to the hospital, and the other mate, the bloke I was actually staying with, because I went through a bad split up and I was staying at his place, he rang to try to contact me, buddy.
But hang on, you've been king hit. You've hit the ground. Somebody has called an ambulance. Who called the ambulance?
Would have been the nightclub, the security of it.
But you were there with two other mates. Where were they?
One was mouth wanting to go up the other road, and I don't know what happened to the other bloke.
They let you get into an ambulance on your own?
Yeah.
This is the thing. You've told me you've woken up in hospital. Someone, how did they know your name? They said, you told me that the nurse was saying, Craig.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not quite sure.
And you were there alone. Anyway, they've let you walk out of the hospital. In some borrowed clothing, because the Ambos had to cut the clothing off you.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've let you walk out of the hospital, and you're suffering dizzy spells. You're concussed.
That's right.
So what happened then?
That's right. My brother and my nephew went past the hospital while going up Rutherford Way, and my nephew noticed me, and they more or less turned around and picked me up and took me to my place. Which my father come up to my place and looked after me for about 8 days. He was a bit concerned about it. So a couple of days into it, he rang another bigger hospital in Newcastle and took me down there and got me a little bit checked out. And basically, Mountain Hospital didn't have any record of it, so they reckon. This has been ongoing for the last 5 years. I've actually gone back to hospital about a year and a half ago, and I had a brain scan and all that sort of thing at Nuka, at John Hunter. That was prescribed through my doctor to go and do that.
And this all happened 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, are you all right today?
Not really, no.
I wonder what... Look, all I can say, Craig, is good luck and keep fighting. And please take care of yourself. If a bloke... I mean, we take these callers at face value. I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened. I'm buggered if I know how Craig, who was supposedly with two mates, how he could have possibly have gotten into the back of an ambulance and taken to hospital without one of his friends with him. I don't know how that was allowed to happen. Didn't happen in my day. But the hospital discharged him. He's been king hit, or what do you say now? Coward punched. And was allowed to walk out of the hospital. Did they do any scans before they let you walk out?
No, not that I knew nothing. And basically, when I went to try and get this criminal compensation thing, I had to go to the hospital to get a record, you know, get reports of it. I went back to my hospital. It was about 2 years later, and they had no record or anything of me being there.
2 years later, I don't know how long they're supposed to keep records for. Anyway, it seems that there are a lot of people falling through the cracks in our health system, not just in Victoria. 133353. Good luck with that, Craig, and you take care of yourself. G'day, Terry.
G'day, Luke. How are you, mate?
I'm okay, Terry. You got a story?
Oh, yeah, softy, living proof you don't need a long neck to be a goose. Mate, hey, you can't be culling the sharks. You want to go into their environment, that's the risk you take. I spent over 10 years on prawn trawlers off the east coast of Queensland. Always said I'd never swim at Stradbroke Island. The sharks were that thick at the back of the boat of a night.
Really?
Really, mate, you could hop off the back of the boat and walk on.
Now, listen, Softy's a good mate of mine. He means well. He reckons that since we started protecting sharks, their numbers have seriously increased.
Yeah, it might be the flogging of the ocean that we do is why they're in a bit closer looking for something to eat. You know, cars kill more people than sharks, mate.
Mm.
So, you know, you can't be knocking the poor old shark on the head. You got to leave him alone.
Well, they've killed through the drop lines, they've killed four tiger sharks in that area over the last 48 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's drum lines off Stradbroke Island, and they had there was a 5-metre white pointer on it a few years ago, and half of it had been eaten. So, you know, by a bigger shark. So... You know, they serve a purpose, Luke. You know, you've got to look after them. And if you're unfortunate enough to be bitten when you're in the water, you know, that's too bad, isn't it? You're just obviously out of luck, mate.
Okay, the debate will continue, Terry. Do you work on boats now?
Yeah, I'm on one right now, mate. I'm out on the water, you know. 320 days of the year, and I don't see that many sharks. I see a few, but, you know, when I swim at the beach, I always make sure somebody's out a bit further than me, Luke.
Yeah, that's what my missus does. She pushes me out.
Yeah, that's the go.
She pushes me out, but hang on, you just said to me 2 minutes ago that you worked on boats and you'd never seen so many sharks out the back of the boat at night time.
Yeah, that's when I was in the commercial fishing industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a word of a lie, mate, you could step off the back of the trawler and walk for, you know, 20 feet on sharks. They swim into your propeller, you know, and they get munched up in the propeller, and the others feed on it. You know, the minute you pull the revs back to winch up, winch the nets off the bottom of the ocean, they're there, you know. And it's an adrenaline rush, you know. You can be... dead tired, stand out the back and look at the sharks, and bingo, you're awake.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
Big time.
So, sorry, I'm just getting to, are sharks on the increase or not?
Oh, look, I wouldn't say they are, no. I'd just say, what I say is, because of the flogging of the oceans that we do, you know, fish-wise, maybe they've come in a bit closer, or more have come in closer to the coast looking for tucker.
You know? And you're on a prawn trawler now, or a fishing boat? What are you on?
No, I'm on a sand dredge, mate.
Oh, okay. You pump sand up.
Yeah. We supply concrete companies there.
I think I've spoken to you before.
Yeah. We've spoken a few times.
Yeah. They used to. I grew up right on a lake, Narrabeen Lagoon. And when I was growing up, there used to be a dredge there all the time. We used to paddle out to it and jump off it and play on it.
Yes.
And they don't do it anymore. And it's so shallow now, you can nearly walk across the lake. And I don't understand why they don't dredge it again. There'd be so much valuable sand there.
That'd be the tree huggers putting a stop to it. Is that tidal? I don't know.
Yeah, it is. But they often shut it off at the mouth. And they have now. Yes, it's a tidal lagoon. I think all lagoons are tidal. That's why they're lagoons and not lakes. But yes, and it opens up into the ocean at Narrabeen. And when we were kids, we used to play in that channel. And if you weren't careful, you'd be sucked out to sea. The tide would really rip out. But there are a number of little creeks attached to this lake, and one of them's near the dog park I go to, and the water is stagnant. It almost looks like it looks when it floods, and it can't escape anywhere because they've blocked it off at the ocean. And I don't know why they have.
Yeah, there's probably a town or something behind it that'd probably come up the drain. You know, big tides, it probably comes out the drain. I don't know the area, but it's obviously got a man-made gate across it.
Oh, they get attracted and they block it off with sand.
Oh, okay.
And and often the locals will get down there at night with their little shovels and open it up.
Yeah, good, because that's what should happen, mate, because that's where all your juvenile stuff breeds.
Yes, I know.
That's like along the foreshore here at Bribey Island, there's three lagoons along there that on the real big tides, it gets in and breaks that natural seawall open.
Yeah, but I think that's where all the sand's coming from. Maybe that's why. Anyway, Terry, thanks for your time. Appreciate your opinion.
Yeah, no worries.
It's good that we get differing opinions. Yep.
Cheers, mate.
See you later. Bye-bye. This is the Night Shift around Australia on the Triple N Network. You wonder why Australians don't trust politicians. Have a listen to this. A former WA Labor MP, remember him, Barry Urban? He has been arrested and charged with a dozen forgery, false evidence, and attempted fraud offences. This is following his resignation from Parliament. The former Labor MP was found to have lied about his qualifications for years. A powerful committee recommended he be expelled from Parliament, but he quit before he could be expelled. But police soon launched their own investigation. Mr. Urban resigned as the member for Darling Range early this year after a powerful committee recommended he be expelled for repeatedly lying about his past. The committee found the former WA police officer lied to the public and the Parliament about his police service and education history. His resignation triggered a by-election for the seat of Darling Range in Perth's East, which saw the seat claimed by Liberal Party candidate Alyssa Hayden. Now, the major fraud squad has charged Mr. Urban with forgery and attempted fraud over the applications he made to WA Police. And we have listeners in this area, the Darling Range. As I say, it's in Perth's East. And you're listening to us through Perth Mix 94.5. I'd love to hear from you. 133353 is the telephone number. He's also charged with five counts of giving false evidence to a parliamentary committee. He was arrested and charged and is due to appear in Perth Magistrates Court on October the 16th. Mr. Urban's former Labor Party colleague, Commerce Minister Bill Johnston, said he looked forward to the court process coming to a conclusion. Anyway, it's extraordinary stuff, isn't it? And you just wonder why people don't trust politicians. Are you with me on this? I think politicians have got to be a lot more accountable. and not just this joker. If a politician promises something and then reneges on that promise, what happens? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And yet politicians are paid very, very well, and they get benefits after they've left government that you and I could only dream of. There has to be more accountability, surely, into what our, and how our politicians behave and act and what they do outside of the parliament. Am I overreacting here? What do you think? 133353 is the telephone number. I have more to say on this a little bit later on. I know there's plenty of you who want to talk about this email I got from Chris the Postie, who's in Bendigo in Victoria. Where has all the money gone from the Channel 9 and Sunrise Channel 7 fundraising for farmers around Australia, about $190 million? And farmers, plenty of them, are not seeing any of it. And this is part of the frustration that Brian Egan from Aussie Helpers told us about a couple of weeks ago, who went to Canberra to see Major General Stephen Day, the man who's been put in charge of distributing all this money, and he said it was just a talk fest, that they didn't want to hear what he had to say. Brian Egan has been in the business of helping farmers for 17 years with Aussie Helpers, and no one has cared to ask him his advice. No one has said, well, where do you think this money should be going? And you've got to jump through so many hoops, if you are a farmer, to be able to get a hand on 1 cent of this money. Many of them are saying, well, bugger it. Too hard. Can't be bothered. 80 pages, 150 questions that you've got absolutely no hope of answering. And so, you have Malcolm Turnbull showboating, saying, oh, look at this, we'll donate $190 million, $12,000 to each farmer. They're not getting it. And they're just saying, bugger it. Can't be bothered. 133353. Kathy, you're in Cairns. I know you feel strongly about this. Hi, Kath.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, Kathy.
Hey, my parents are going through a really hard time with the drought and that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the politicians, like, they have to go through like 18 pages of paperwork, and they got told, "I'll just go down to Centrelink, and they'll look after you." Now my parents don't even live near a Centrelink where they can just go down, and from old school, you don't.
They're not getting the money. How old are your parents?
My dad's 81.
Your dad's 81. And how old's mum?
Excellent. I'm 79.
And what sort of farm is it?
They've got a cattle property.
And where are they?
They're out past Georgetown, between Georgetown and... where are they?
Where's the nearest city?
Cairns.
Cairns. How far from Cairns?
They're 16 hours driving.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
16 hours west of Cairns?
Yep.
Georgetown?
Yep.
And your dad's 81, your mum's 79?
Yep.
And they're struggling, are they?
Oh, I mean, I've never seen my dad cry.
Oh, dear.
And I mean, like, he weeps, you know, and you just feel like going down there. And, you know, I can understand we've lost a lot of friends to suicide from the land. And it's just so heartbreaking. Just unbelievable.
How many head of cattle have your parents got?
Well, mum and dad had 1,200. Now I think they're down to about... not even 300 on the land.
You're kidding. Are they able to sell any of their cattle?
No, they're just too far gone.
So what, the cattle are, are the cattle just dropping dead, or have they had to shoot them?
They have to shoot them.
Then, and then what do they do with them?
They just got their big pits now that they're just pushing them into.
Oh, how heartbreaking is this? And so your parents are eligible for drought relief, but they can't get it?
No. No, they're not. Because, like, they said, just go sell the property, you know, and that's why we've got foreign investors standing back, because the government's going to, and that's what's going on. And
so
I believe,
who said to your parents, sell the property?
The minister from up their way.
Are you serious? He said, just sell the property.
Yep.
And they've got foreign, investors sitting back waiting to pounce.
Yes.
Like literally, like vultures on a corpse.
Yep. And that's, you know, and you know, my dad's sitting back going, well, if what do I do now? What do I do?
Yeah, and you how you'd be tempted. What's his farm worth, do you reckon?
Oh, it used to be a couple of $1 million.
Yeah, well, you see, if it's under 15 million, the Foreign Investment Review Board doesn't have to know about it.
That's right. I think now, I think it's probably about worth about seven mil.
How many acres?
That's what, oh.
Have a guess.
I think it's about 28,000
hectares. 28,000
hectares,
and this is west of Cairns.
Yeah.
And they can't get their hands on any compensation.
No.
What about grain? Have they had any of the donated grain?
No, because it's too far out.
Too far.
What we've been doing is, like, the family's just been putting, you know, grain and that on trucks when we can afford it, send it out to them. But yeah, what we're trying to do is, you know, get my parents just, you know, a little bit of relief. But everyone's helping around, you know, the properties right round near them. You've got a lot of old farmers out there.
Yeah, well, look at your dad, 81, and he's worried sick about it. He should be these should be his retirement years.
Yeah.
But the politicians can retire on a huge pension. You know, as soon as they leave the parliament, here's your dad working his ass off at 81.
Yep.
Worried. Do they own the farm, or does the bank own it?
No, I think they own it, but I'm not sure, because my younger sister's still out there, and with her husband, and they're helping.
Yep.
They run the farm. And
oh, dear. But, it makes you want to cry. It makes you want to cry, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It really does. And you just sit back and you actually, you know, you really feel like...
Well, it's not the government's fault it hasn't rained, but we've got this money, and people like your mum and dad need to get hold of this money, and they need to be able to buy feed.
Said, look, here's a truckload of feed for you.
Mm.
You know, it'd be something.
Yeah. Is your dad okay?
Yeah, he is. I wouldn't say he's 100%, but, you know, he keeps coming out and going. You know, you just got to take the good with the bad, and you got to just keep chugging along, you know, as he does all the time. You know, my dad did this, and my dad, and he goes back, you know, when he was a kid on the farm. But yeah,
this farm, this is his. He grew up on this farm.
There've been five generations on the farm.
Five generations, eh?
Yep.
Dear, oh dear. You know, there was a story that was in the news about 4 weeks ago. There was a lady, husband and a wife, that were on a farm about 110 kilometres outside of Goulburn.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going real hard. There's no rain, and they're seriously suffering. They had to shoot stock. They managed to get some of their lambs to market, but in a very, very bad state. Anyway, he had to, the husband had to take a job in the mines in Western Australia because they needed an income. And so mum stayed on the farm, and he's working in the mines. And she got this paperwork from the government to see if they can get some help, this drought relief, this some of this $12,000.
Yep.
And anyway, she's ill. The wife is ill, and so she got a friend to drive her to Goulburn to the Centrelink office with this paperwork.
Yep.
But she couldn't. She didn't trust herself behind the wheel because she's not well.
Yep.
So she drove all the way into Goulburn, waited in line, saw the person at Centrelink, and you'll never guess, Kathy, she was knocked back.
Yep.
Because you want to know why?
Because her husband's in the mine.
Because, no.
Oh.
She was knocked back. Oh, I don't know about that, but she was knocked back because in the paperwork she didn't have her husband's birth certificate. I'm not kidding.
Yep.
I am not kidding.
I mean, even
and so when... she rang her husband at next chance she could. And she explained it to him, and he said, "Bugger it, don't worry about it anymore, darling. It's too hard. Don't worry about it."
Exactly, exactly. I mean, even with my mum and dad, you know, my father turned around. He said, "Look," he said, "I'd rather be out in the paddock and put a gun to my head than deal with these politicians."
Well, don't you,
and it's sad.
Don't you let him do that.
Oh, no. Oh, I definitely wouldn't do that.
Don't you dare. I mean, and listen to this, folks. Lifeline is there, folks, 24-hour. It's free, 13, 11, 14. You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm just so frustrated with, you know.
Yeah, I can hear that.
With everything. You know, we've worked hard all our lives on the land, and like I've moved into the city.
Mm.
But, I mean, they can only get kicked in the guts so many times before you break. And that's what you see with so many people out there.
You see, I mean, look at the money we give for foreign aid. We build bridges in other countries. And what do we do for our own?
Yep.
Give them nothing but bureaucracy and red tape. And on the surface, aren't we great? Look at this, $190 million we'll give the farmers.
And they don't get it.
And they don't get it.
Get a cent.
And they don't get it. Thank you for your call, Kathy. Give your dad a ring today, okay?
I will, thanks.
You take care. Bye-bye. There you are. While Jess is doing that, before you start answering calls, Jess, we received a call, I believe it was from Nick, who's listening to us in Perth on Perth's 94.5 Mix FM. He was talking about the culling of the sharks up on the Whitsundays, and I'll talk about that again in just a second. Four sharks have now been killed, and it looks like they will continue to kill sharks until they find the shark that, or these sharks that bit those two women last week. How they will identify them, God knows. I have no idea what their plan is. But anyway, Nick was also saying how excited he was that his beloved West Coast Eagles are in the AFL Grand Final versus the Collingwood Magpies coming up this weekend at the MCG. He said normally a return flight from Perth to Melbourne would be around $700. Is that what he said?
$800 at most, yeah.
$800 at most. Jess has just gone online to have a look at flights from Perth to Melbourne return. What have you come up with?
The cheapest price is $1,300, and it'll take you 9 hours to get there.
9 hours, Perth to Melbourne. How much?
$1,300. So the best price is $1,500, but the fastest one is $4,200.
Jeez. Who's that with?
Oh, I didn't check. I don't know if we should name it, Lukey.
Anyway, it's $4,000? And that gets you there 8 minutes earlier, you were saying.
8 minutes earlier, if you've got the money.
I mean, this is price gouging, isn't it? I mean, I know that when you are celebrating, for example, a peak season, people put their prices up. You want to stay at Jindabyne or Thredbo or Charlotte's Pass during winter. It's going to cost a lot more in winter than it is in summer. If you want to go to the Whitsundays we've been talking about or to a coastal village during the Christmas school holidays, it costs you more. But this is one weekend. The West Coast Eagles are in the grand final and $4,000 return on one particular airline for a flight that is 8 minutes faster than the other one, which is how much?
$1,500. So that's more than double.
Normally $700 or $800. Unbelievable. 133353 if you want to be part of the program. Hey, look, here is another disturbing story. We heard that over the weekend, another convenience store worker had been attacked in what has become an increasingly common occurrence. Criminals, lured by the sky-high value of cigarettes due to the government's tobacco excise, are robbing local shops to get their hands on them. Tobacco first, then cash. This is according to Jeff Rogu, who is the chief executive of the Australasian Association of Convenience Stores. Tobacconists in Queensland have also expressed concerns for the safety of themselves and their stores, with one man's shop being hit twice in 1 week by thieves targeting cigarettes. New Zealand, same crisis, with aggravated robberies soaring by 87% between 2016 and 2017. Last year, we saw figures from the Australian government that revealed that our quit smoking rate stagnated between 2013 and 2016. And this is despite repeated hikes in tobacco excise. So, what have we got here? We've got crime on the increase by criminals who are desperate for cigarettes, and the quit smoking figures have stalled, despite the price of cigarettes going through the roof. What do we do? The excise, the high price of cigarettes, was supposed to deter people from smoking. It was supposed to encourage people to put the bungers away. But the quit rate has stagnated. And the black market illicit tobacco industry is worth over $15 billion a year in Australia. To me, it has become increasingly clear that making cigarettes more expensive can only work if addicted smokers have access to alternatives that minimise the harms they face. And surely, e-cigarettes or vapes has got to be such an alternative. Over 6 million Europeans had quit smoking by switching to vapes as at 2014. And that number is likely to climb further. I mean, seriously, studies have shown that vapes are at least 95% less harmful than smoking, as they deliver nicotine that satiates the smoker's cravings without the tar or those carcinogens being produced when a cigarette's lit. Unlike nicotine patches and gums, these products deliver nicotine efficiently and imitate the action of smoking. And it makes it easier for smokers to transition out of the habit. But what do we do here in Australia? We don't allow the vapes. But we do have costly cigarette packets. And crime is on the increase because of the rising cost. And once again, when you make something that expensive, cost prohibited, what does that involve? It creates a black market, and that's exactly what's happening in Australia. The black market in illicit tobacco, I'll repeat it, is worth over $15 billion a year. 133353 is the telephone number. This is The Night Shift on Triple M.